Yani Shivaradama Dharati Jaya. Jnani Jnani Hagitani Tadbala Charitani Cha Dhari Nirmantane Kali Swaranti Tani Agayata. While churning, she remembered the childish activities of Krishna, and in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities. It was Dipavali, the third day of the ancient Vaishnava festival of the same name, the pageants and celebrations of which would resound through the lanes and homes of Gokula for another two blissful days. Festivities had first begun with the Brajbasis cleansing and renovating their homes to receive Goddess Lakshmi, decorating doorways with colorful designs and gracing windowsills with dancing ghee lamps. But on this, the third night of the festival and the actual Dipavali day, there would be special celebrations in Nanda Maharaja's kingdom, for it was on this night long ago that Lord Ramachandra returned to Ayodhya with Sita Devi. It was a special day. The sun had yet to rise and all was still. Gradually, as the light of dawn edged over the horizon, birds awakened, ruffled their feathers, and began singing songs in praise of the King of Planets. Those songs were more delightful than the celestial mantra with which Brahmins were greeting the sun, Om Bhurvabhar Swaha. When the cows lowed in concert to the pleasing sounds of bird songs and mantras, then the Brajbasis stirred. Mother Yashoda lay in bed with her son. Waking, she looked towards her child, his lotus eyes closed in sleep, and affectionately whispered, "My blue lotus." Then, with the image of her darling still in mind, she cautiously turned to her other side and, sighing, "Blue lotus," drowsed away. Some very qualified demigods and their equally qualified wives hovered in the sky. They marveled to see the controller of numberless universes in his original Gopa form resting in the arms of his mother. And they thrilled as their affection for Krishna surged at the sight of the Lord's mother, who, to the vision of mortals, appeared to be just another gopi. In an attempt to rouse Yashoda Devi and so begin anew baby Krishna's pastimes, a fresh dawn breeze ascended from the cowherd village below. With the rustling of leaves, it weaved in stealth up the hills through the now open palace gates, past the many opulent rooms, and onto the first floor balcony of Yashoda's suites, pausing in respect before entering her dawnlit chambers. Mother Yashoda's suites were spacious. The marble-tiled bedchamber opened onto an expansive balcony that overlooked the flower garden, Gokula village beyond that, and the pastures of Mahavan beyond that still. Inside the bedchamber was an oversized bed, a bureau and chair, two curved divans circling around table, and Krishna's golden cradle. The walls were made of marble, inlaid with precious and semi-precious jewels and traditional motifs, which, when touched by lamplight, would act as lamps themselves. Before a mirrored retaining wall between the two gold-framed doorways to the balcony was an ornate full-height ghee lamp of 108 wicks that would illuminate the room at night. Through a gilded doorway to the west was a spacious dressing salon replete with wardrobes of silken clothes and drawers of priceless ornaments. Beyond the dressing salon was the bath chamber, to the south of which, sharing the same balcony, was the kitchen and pantry, and west of that, a stately reception room. Both the kitchen and reception room led down a half flight of stairs to the grand hall of 84 pillars, the Chaturashi Stambha. Another separate exit led from the kitchen to the inner courtyard below and to the adjoining gardens that lay through a small guarded gate in the palace walls. From the garden, one could follow a path through Gokula village to the Jamuna, and it was along this path that Mother Yashoda would walk for her river baths, sometimes with her baby. Gently touching Yashoda's sleeping form, the breeze whispered, "O Queen, whose good fortune is without limit, can you rest in the arms of the goddess of sleep while the cause of creation stirs by your side? Arise." Hearing this appeal, her bodily hairs erect in ecstasy, little by little the beautiful wife of Nanda Maharaj awoke. Seeing that her child was still deep in slumber, she carefully raised herself, then as if drawn by a magnet, bent over to gently kiss her son's cheek. Although he did not stir, in his sleep Krishna felt the indescribable touch of love personified, and that touch caused waves of ecstasy to course through his body and mind, bringing pictures of his mother into his dreams. He sighed happily, puckered his cheeks, and then sank deeply into his pillow. Like a stately swan, Yashoda rose from bed and tiptoed to her bath chamber, where only one of her maids-in-waiting was present. Still drowsy, she cast a questioning glance at the young girl. Then, remembering that the palace servants were preparing for Deepavali, she nodded her head knowingly. It would be a gorgeous festival. After bowing to the queen, the maidservant skillfully seated her on a dais, exchanged her nightgown for a bathing dress, and proceeded to remove her pure cosmetics and scented kajal. Thereafter, she wiped Yashoda's hair with a soft, wet cloth, loosened her long braid, and carefully combed it so that her hair rested flat on her back. While washing Yashoda's feet, the young gopi said, "Everyone's so excited about making this Deepavali festival special." Yashoda replied in a whisper, "Why do they want it to be so special?" "Because your son Krishna is now old enough to relish such events. Everyone wants to please him." "That's kind of them." "Because of the love they bear for Krishna, service streams spontaneously from their hearts." Yashoda accepted the mouthwash offered her and began to brush her teeth with a eucalyptus twig while the girl mixed herbs and scents into the bathwater. After rinsing her mouth and discarding its contents into a spittoon, Yashoda Devi closed her eyes as the maidservant massaged her limbs with aromatic oils, washed her hair, and then bathed and dried her. During all this they spoke, "Sundari, go see if my son is still sleeping." Peeking into the bedchamber, she replied, "Even at such a young age, he resembles a resting god." "That is what the sage Garga concluded." "That he would be as good as Narayan?" Yashoda Devi nodded her head. "Because my transcendental son is exactly like Narayan in qualities, opulence, fame, and influence, Garga Muni told us to raise him very carefully." "Oh, I'm so excited. Just hearing these things make my hair stand on end." "Since my son has appeared in our town, there seems to be some special magic that makes everyone's heart thrill with joy, even at the most trying times." "Yes," replied the maid. "It is as we have been transported to Vaikuntha or beyond. And through these unceasing waves of happiness, here Krishna and his sports seem to flourish in our minds in such a way that we can think of nothing else." "Is that bad?" the queen teased, her voice rich with pride. "Not at all. It's delightful, except that..." "Except what?" "Except that when we are lost to thoughts of his pranks, we're prone to be late for duties, or worse, we tend to spoil them, like burning meals." Gently slapping the girl's cheeks, Yashoda smiled. "Oh, you exaggerate. You're making excuses for burning my son's milk. Hurry and dress me." With Yashoda's bath completed, the maidservant brought forth a petticoat, a saffron yellow sari, and a matching choli. She then brought a large tray of ornaments laden with jeweled rings, anklets, bracelets, and necklets of silver gold. Following the Pavali tradition, the clothes and ornaments were new. Nanda Maharaj personally saw to it. And when the servant girl, distracted by her own Krishna Leela chatter, proved too slow, Mother Yashoda dressed herself. Mildly rebuking her assistant, Yashoda said, "My son will wake any moment, and here you are taking hours to ornament me. I'll do it myself. Meanwhile, quickly decorate my head and braid with those flowers." Taking a seat behind Nanda's queen with a basket of malati flowers in her lap, the maidservant carefully inserted one flower after the other in Yashoda's braid until it looked like a spotted serpent. She then tied a small garland to both the root and the tip of the braid, and after decorating from the back, she moved to one side and then the other, placing flowers in and above the curls hanging over Yashoda's forehead. When touching Yashoda's hair, loving thoughts would stream through the maidservant's body like ecstatic currents. She reasoned, the vines of Mother Yashoda's thoughts have become bluish by constant meditation on Krishna. Sprinkled by the nectar of love, they have grown out as her hair. Inspecting her artistry, she added, goddesses fall from their airplanes in envy to see the beauty of this queen. Restless for the service of her son, Yashoda cut short her own grooming and, followed by her assistant, hurried into the courtyard below, where three golden churns of milk were waiting. Like the village woman, the men had also left early that morning, but they had gone to perform the annual sacrifice for the heavenly king, Indra, before returning for Deepavali. Therefore, Yashoda would take those churns upstairs herself. From half the milk, she would make yogurt for tomorrow's butter, and from the other half, she would prepare sweets by boiling and condensing.